This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Larry Allen of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Larry speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Larry Allen.
We have another good show today. A guest that I'll introduce in just a second. Happy to have her down. I think you all are really going to enjoy the repartee this half hour on Off the Shelf. But before we get into that, I want to remind you that nominations are open, indeed, for the Excellence in Partnership Awards. What's that? Glad you asked. It is the awards program that benefits the people and individuals and organizations that have made significant contributions to the world of GSA programming. So if you know somebody who's made a good use of GSA's contracts, has been a loyal user, maybe you'd even like to nominate yourself. Find out everything you need to know about that at eipawards.org. That's eipawards.org. Or call Melissa King at the Coalition at 202-331-0975, and she will take good care of you. So my guest today is Allison Doyle. Allison is a partner in the Washington firm of McKenna Long & Aldridge. We're going to be talking to Allison this half hour about the topic of revolving doors, something that people in both government and industry are aware of. It's an issue that has been discussed quite a bit by the current administration. In fact, they've had their own unique rules that they've put on the political appointees that work for them, and we're going to talk about that. But let's start out by welcoming Allison Doyle to Off the Shelf.
Thanks, Larry. Glad to be here.
Great to have you here, Allison, and appreciate you coming to talk on this issue. It's one that we really haven't ever addressed before on Off the Shelf, and yet, as I mentioned, it is a current topic that has interest of people, no matter on what side of the government industry aisle they sit. This is a company town, Allison, and people do go back and forth between the government and the private sector, much as some workers would go back and forth with anywhere, say between Bank of America or Wachovia. There are special issues here, though, when we're talking about the government. What are some of the perception issues that, while they may seem like they're just matter-of-fact to people in D.C., might paint a different picture to people outside town or those to whom or for whom transparency is particularly important?
Well, Larry, you know, the big underlying concerns of this revolving door topic are the perceptions of people changing sides when they change jobs, of leaving, you know, working for the government faithfully for many years and then turning around and coming back and working for a contractor, supposedly on the other side of the fence. People raise questions about whether in either job, depending on which way you went over the fence, you could continue to be impartial in doing your duty for your current employer in that environment. That's really the sort of underlying concern. There's, frankly, a major suspicion that almost nobody can be trusted. And that's, of course, not true. Most people can be trusted to serve their employers faithfully. But at the same time, you want to have in place a certain baseline level of protections, a structure to manage the potentials for conflicts of interest, going into and coming out of government so that everybody has a baseline understanding of what you can and can't do. And those are the sorts of things that don't always get, played out. You have people with biases and perceptions about switching sides, and they don't think about these protections that are built into the system to make it easier for people to make these transitions and protect the interests of the government and of industry.
So I think what you're saying is that there are perception issues that drive a lot of this topic of revolving door, and that causes some people to look with it at a jaundiced eye, but there are, in fact, rules and regulations that govern this. Let's talk about those for a minute. Beyond perception, Allison,
sure.
What are the basic rules that govern post-employment restrictions? Let's say I'm somebody coming out of government and I want to go work for a private sector contractor. Now, there are basic rules, but they also vary a little bit depending on who I am and what I've been doing in government, right?
Right, right. They actually, the restrictions go up the more senior you are. The understanding is that the more senior you are, the more risk there might be that you might have some improper influence to wield after you leave the government, and so therefore there are more restrictions. But in fact, there are restrictions on everybody. And the most basic restrictions flow from, it's actually a criminal statute, 18 U.S.C. 207.
So we jump right into the criminal here.
Sorry.
That'll get people's attention.
Ultimately, there are criminal penalties available, but there are also civil penalties. And the point is that this is where the Congress has chosen to set the basic rules. And they're actually very simple rules and not as restrictive as you might think. The most basic rule is that anybody leaving the government has a lifetime ban on representing a new employer back to the government on any matter in which they were personally and substantially involved. And, you know, for your audience, you know, say you were, you know, personally and substantially involved in putting together a solicitation for a contract that was competitively awarded. If you left the government right after that contract was let, you'd have a 2-year ban from coming back and representing someone to the government, you know, negotiating an extension to that contract or a mod or something like that. But at the same time, it's only a representational ban. You can actually take a job with that company. There are other potential restrictions we'll get to. Maybe you can't. But assuming you could go work for that company, you can advise them about that contract. You can use your expertise and your knowledge as an experienced government contracts person. You just can't use your connections. You know, that's what the basic rule would say. So that's the lifetime restriction. There's a 2-year restriction on similar representational contacts for matters that were pending under your official responsibility. So you didn't touch them personally, but you had people working for you that were responsible for them, and so theoretically you had the ability to influence them. Now, that applies to everybody. For senior government employees, and senior is defined in the law, it actually fluctuates based on the overall pay schedules. Right now, the cutoff is about $153,000 a year. If you made that much, you are a senior employee. Those people, when they leave the government, have a 1-year representational bar from contacting their former agency as a whole. Agency is very carefully defined, and it may not be, you know, like DOD is actually broken down into several separate bits, so that if you worked for the Navy, it's the Navy you'd be restricted from, just for example. So you have a 1-year agency-wide ban from making representational contacts. Again, you can use all your knowledge. You can talk to people about who you should talk to. You just can't go talk to them. There are more restrictions for very senior, and by the time you get to very senior, you're talking like high-level political appointees, cabinet secretaries, things like that. They actually have a 1-year government-wide ban. Another thing that doesn't come up very often, but you know, I hate to leave it out, is that once you get to the senior level, anybody who leaves at that level also has a 1-year ban on representing any foreign government or foreign political parties back to the United States government. That comes up occasionally. And of particular interest to the procurement community, of course, is the procurement integrity rules. This is a special category.
A special category on procurement integrity that I want to dive into a little bit when we return with our conversation with Allison Doyle. We're talking to Allison, partner with law firm of McKenna Long & Aldridge, this week here on Off the Shelf. I'm Larry Allen. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussions on procurement integrity right here on Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Every government agency has a distinct mission, yet they all share a common vision: to better serve the American people. And it's been the determination of every federal employee that's made this vision a reality and our country what it is today. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to have helped government clients meet their missions and prouder still to continue providing support. Today, Booz Allen's 20,000 dedicated professionals have the expertise, the experience, and the solutions to help you continue adapting to ever-changing public service pressures while achieving your goals. So whether you're responding to today's demands or looking beyond the horizon, count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Booz Allen Hamilton, delivering results that endure. BoozAllen.com. That's BoozAllen.com.
And we're back here on Off the Shelf, where I am Larry Allen, your most humble host, every weekday at this exact time on Federal News Radio 1500. AM, where we bring you the very latest developments in the world of commercial solutions procurement. I want to remind you that we welcome your feedback here on Off the Shelf. If you have an idea for a show guest, maybe a question for our guest today, maybe a question for your humble host, you know where to reach us by now. It's offtheshelf at federalnewsradio.com. That's offtheshelf at federalnewsradio.com. We always love to hear from our listeners, whether you're loyal or not. So drop us a line, and we promise to respond to each and every one of you. We're talking this half hour to Allison Doyle. Allison is a partner with the Washington law firm of McKenna Long and Aldridge, and we're talking to Allison about the world of revolving door rules and regulations. Washington, D.C. is a company town, one where employees not infrequently go back and forth between government and industry, and we're talking to Allison today about some of the things to look out for in that area to make sure that when you're doing that, whether you're government or industry, you're doing it correctly and understanding what the rules are. Allison, when we went into that break, you were beginning to talk a little bit about procurement integrity rules and what that meant in terms of post-employment restrictions. Continue on with that point, if you would.
Why? Fine, Larry. procurement integrity. Special rules, crafted by Congress to address what they view as the enhanced risks of conflicts of interest associated with procurements, because, of course, that's lots of money changing hands. We need to worry about that. In the context of today's issue revolving DOOR, procurement integrity imposes a special one-year compensation bar on certain government employees involved in federal procurements. And I'm not going to list them all, but it's PCOs, ACOs, heads of evaluation teams, source selection authorities, and generally anyone who gets to make a major procurement decision worth at least $10 million. So it's not just an award. It can also be a claim. It can also be approval of rates at a certain level if it's worth $10 million. These people, one-year compensation ban from the last time that they performed whatever that triggering service was. So effectively that means you cannot go work for someone whose procurement you are responsible for that time period. It's the only straight out ban we have in this area. Procurement integrity also includes an extra layer of rules about employment discussions. This is something that actually comes up in the regulations, the conflict of interest regulations for federal employees generally. And procurement integrity actually doesn't really add much, but it just reinforces the concept that particularly when you're involved in a procurement, if you are approached with the possibility of employment, you have certain responsibilities, including, and these are in the alternative, obviously, A, declining the opportunity immediately, B, reporting it. If you're interested, you have to report it to your bosses, and also recuse yourself from any responsibility on the procurement that would be affected by that contact. But it's not just procurement integrity. The general conflict of interest rules would require the same thing. You want to talk to a contractor about employment and you have responsibility for something they're handling, you must recuse yourself.
And this actually does happen. I mean, people do, I know from my own experience, people do recuse themselves from things that affect their job if they're approached by somebody. And it's not unusual, Allison, to have whoever, if you're a covered official and you're in that situation, you contact your ethics office and you actually maybe write a letter, right? And say, for the period of the next 30 days, I'm recusing myself from X, and then, we'll catch back up at
Absolutely.
The end of 30
days. Absolutely. I mean, as your lawyer, if you were in that situation, I would counsel you, A, call your ethics officer now, do that first. Hopefully the people who have approached you have, some understanding of the ethics rules, but really you got to take care of yourself. Talk to your ethics officer about what you're allowed to do or should do. Recuse, if you're interested, my bottom line assumption is you got to recuse yourself. And always put it in writing. Always better safe than sorry. Some oral recusal is the sort of thing that people, hey, I'm a lawyer, I see all these things. Somebody will come back later and say, where's the proof that you actually recused yourself? I put it in writing if it's important. So, yes.
And those that are the does happen. As we say, people do, in fact, take those steps, and you want to make sure that you're careful. And actually, been in town for 20 plus years doing this, and it happens. And as long as you follow the rules, it's pretty straightforward. If you don't follow the rules, well, then you end up like people in DOD like Darlene Drian, and you end up not only with not having the job, you end up in jail.
Minor problem. No. There are times when I have clients, corporate clients come to us with an issue. They want to talk to someone, and this person is refusing to talk to their ethics officer. They're concerned that their bosses will find out, that they'll look like they're cheesing out on the job or something. But the bottom line is the ethics officers are there to serve all of the employees. Yes, we can't promise that every single one of them will always be, available and helpful. unfortunately, that's just the case. But, the best thing that, federal employees can do to protect themselves to try and take advantage of those services, find out from them what the rules are, find out what you need to do. Let's put it this way. We tell our clients, tell the employee that you're recruiting, get an ethics letter across the board. You don't even want to hire them without the ethics letter because you don't know what you don't know until the agency has gotten together and decided, here's what you're responsible for, here are the restrictions that flow from that, and we all get agreement on that. Without that ethics letter, you just don't know what's going to jump out to bite you. So that's always my best advice to anybody in that situation, both the contractor and the federal employee, is, get everybody on paper saying, here's what the restrictions are, here's what you can and can't do.
And in fact, we're talking about a lot of things that happen with senior level folks as well as rank and file employees, but there are different rules on top of these, Allison Doyle. If I am an appointee of the current administration, this administration required all of its appointees to sign special restrictions on what they can do when they leave the administration. Let's start talking about what some of those are.
All right. And obviously this is going to become more and more pertinent as we head to the end of, the president's first term, and people start making decisions about what they want to do professionally. The Obama administration was particularly concerned about the perception that people might trade favors for future employment, things like that, which is, of course, already addressed by the laws we have, but they were particularly sensitive to it. And they were particularly concerned about the role of lobbyists, flipping in and out of the government on the same issue and what they should do about them. So they imposed some extra restrictions. There's an Obama ethics pledge. It's actually up on the White House website. OG, the Office of Government Ethics, issued a few letters helping to interpret it in detail, but it has some basic principles in it. It applies to all the senior people, basically political appointees, addresses certain revolving door issues. It actually had rules going both ways. It said that incoming appointees, people brought in from industry, could not deal with any issue that they had dealt with in the private sector for 2 years after they entered the administration. So they sort of had to come in and start doing something else rather than what they had been doing. Incoming lobbyists were not allowed to work for the same agency that they used to lobby. Now, on the way out, if you're, if anybody were looking at recruiting someone in the government now, or someone in the government is thinking about seeing if they can move out to industry, for those senior employees that I defined earlier on, right now they're making about $153,000, and we'll get back to in a minute.
We'll get back to what happens with those senior level employees, leaving you with a little cliffhanger here on Off the Shelf. We're talking this half hour to Allison Doyle about the world of revolving door rules. I'm Larry Allen. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Nominations for the Excellence in Partnership Awards are open. Here's your chance to recognize innovation and excellence in the contracting programs of the General Services Administration. Nominate that company that's gone the extra mile in supporting a government agency. Nominate that GSA representative who calls on your office and provides support. Nominate your own agency to recognize your innovative use of GSA to meet your agency's mission. Winners will be announced at the EIP Awards on November 1st. Go to EIPAwards.org and nominate someone today. That's EIPAwards.org.
And welcome back to Off the Shelf, where I am Larry Allen, president of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and for this half hour each weekday where we air here on Off the Shelf, not each weekday, but just each weekday when we air, I am your host here on Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, where we bring you the unrelentingly loyal listener in government and industry, the very latest developments in the world of commercial solutions procurement. And we thank you for tuning in this half hour. We're talking this half hour to Allison Doyle. Allison is a partner with the Washington law firm of McKenna Long and Aldridge, government contracts law firm. They do other things, but we're talking about government contracts here on Off the Shelf. And specifically, we're talking about post-employment restrictions, revolving door issues. And we talked in our first segment about general things that you have to do, depending on what type of level employee you are in the government. And Allison, as we came into the end of that last session, you started talking a little bit about the particular restrictions that are placed on Obama administration employees and the fact that as we get close to the middle of the first 4 years of this administration, this is going to be increasingly a factor as people decide what to do in their professional lives. Let's finish that off. What's going on if I'm an Obama? You talked a little bit about what happens if I go into the administration. What happens if I decide to leave?
Right. As I was saying, the senior employees, the ones who make over about this year, $153,000 a year, you remember under 207, I mentioned they have a one-year agency-wide bar on contacting their former agency on frankly, any topic. Under the Obama Ethics Pledge, that's a two-year commitment. That's 2 years where you just can't even go back to your prior agency. And for outgoing lobbyists, they're not allowed to lobby for the rest of the Obama term of administration. And it's not just your agency. So that is if you're a lobbyist going into government, that was a huge commitment. And coming out is going to be pretty difficult. There's a lot of things you can do without actually actively lobbying up front, but it still restricts your ability to market yourself, as a professional in your field when there's certain things that are normal for a lobbyist to do that you won't be able to do for a while. So it was a big commitment for people who chose to sign up for this administration. At this point, I'm not hearing about a lot of waivers being authorized by the administration. I mean, there is authority for it, but they haven't done a lot of it.
In fact, we started to hear, just in one case in particular that I'm aware of, there may be others, of somebody who said, what do you mean that's what I signed up for? Well, of course, that's not what I meant. Can I get a waiver? And there was some question about that, and I don't know that she got it.
Right, and I wouldn't be surprised to see more of that happening. We see that a lot in our as a lawyer, people say, I had no idea what I was signing when I did that. I will say that, just in slight contrast, the Clinton administration also had a supplemental ethics pledge, not as broad as the Obama administration pledge. And at the end of that administration, they ended up essentially waiving the whole thing. I think the perception being that since there's going to be an entire changeover in leadership of the government, Republican Party now had majority all over the place, there was no point in continuing restrictions on all these Democrats floating out of the government. I don't know what the Obama administration will do. Their concern, obviously, is keeping their day-to-day business now on the straight and narrow. And so I expect them to stick to it.
That was going to be a question I had for you. We've had a Clinton administration pledge. We have the Obama one, which is a little bit more comprehensive. Is this a trend you think you might see moving forward with any presidential administration?
Well, it obviously has become a bit of a fashion, but the Bush administration didn't do the same thing. We do have an underlying layer, as I said early in the show, underlying layer of laws that Congress has crafted to cover the landscape. And so the question is why we feel we need an extra layer just to go with each administration. I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think there's a pretty comprehensive legal structure out there already. So
there's comprehensive legal structure out there already, but yet we know that there are some personal conflict of interest rules and regulations that are in the promulgation process. They're proposed rules issued that would impact the work of service contractors. We talk a lot about the fact that we have a very mingled workforce here, particularly in the Washington area, people working side by side, and the only thing that really differentiates them is the particular background color of their badge. So there are new rules being proposed on this, Allison. Can you tell us a little bit about what they are and how this reflects the current thinking of the administration leaders on this topic?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to start off with an observation, obviously, that this is not a new issue. The commingled workforce, the substantial number of federal service contractors out there, and dealing with the questions of conflicts of interest and even revolving door in the context of those kinds of workplaces has been an issue the federal government has been struggling with actually for many years. I've been aware of it for at least 15 years, if not more, of various agencies doing piecemeal things on their own when they realized that they had a situation where they had a lot of federal employees and contractor employees in the same workplace. subject at that time to sort of, you know, that one group was subject to their company rules, the other group was subject to some very strict federal rules, made for morale problems in the workplace. Excuse me. And so this is an issue that's been developing over time, the recognition of it. Congress has nibbled at it a couple of times, and now finally we have a draft proposed government-wide rule that would establish some basic principles. I think it's a good step forward. I think the good thing is that they didn't try to be too prescriptive in this rule, because every contract is going to be slightly different, and each contracting officer should be looking at what they're setting up, what program they're setting up, and deciding what's an appropriate set of rules to put in place. I mean, we're setting up an environment where we have a bunch of federal and government federal and company employees who are otherwise absolutely no different from each other. Maybe we should make sure they have absolutely the same rules. In another environment,
there certainly is a lot of discussion around that point.
Right, and other environments where it may be, the company employees are doing something different, and certainly they're service employees, but there's not a reason to subject them to the day-to-day conflict of interest rules. So, there's a lot of flexibility, but what the proposed rule says, that, and it really is only focused on, again, acquisition-related employees. That's obviously where the money is and where they're most concerned. Truthfully, there's probably other places in the government, not specifically acquisition-related, that could use this sort of guidance. But anyway, contractor employees who perform acquisition functions that are closely associated with inherently governmental, how do you like that mouthful?
Right.
Important, sensitive jobs related to planning, development of statements of work, evaluation, awards. I don't know why you'd have a contractor making an award decision, but hey, it's in the rule. Things like that, sensitive procurement-related decisions. They want to make sure that employees like that have no conflicting financial interests. And the proposed rule would have both the agency in setting up the procurement require that the contractors ensure there be no conflicting interest in the affected employees, and require the contractors to have systems in place to both train their employees, screen them for financial interests that might conflict.
So something to be on the lookout for if you're a contractor and your employees are doing work on government sites. These could be things that are new to you. And eventually, I think your point's a good one, Allison. You want to make sure that we don't get ourselves to the point where the government can't take advantage of people who have good experience just because of what they used to do. There is that concern sometimes. You want people who have some experience, but you also want things to be transparent and above board. Allison Doyle, I would like to thank you for being my guest here this half hour on Off the Shelf. Being a great guest. I'd like to have you back down the road, talk about this or other things. I also want to thank you out there in the listening audience, our unspeakably loyal listeners. I'm Larry Allen. Join us again here next week on Off the Shelf as we continue our discussions in the world of commercial solutions procurement right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Larry Allen of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. WFED, your source for federal news now.